Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Lee Cantor here with Katie Galley, another episode of High Velocity Radio, but this is the most important type of episode of High Velocity Radio, Katie. These are the Thought Leader Radio episodes where we interview the best and the brightest.
Mm-hmm. We definitely do. Some great thought leaders out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate your help in helping me prepare for this interview.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Instrumental. So let me get right into things. We got Carolyn Pistone, and she is with Clear Blue Commercial. Welcome, Carolyn.
Thank you so much, Lee. I'm thrilled to be here.
Before we get too far into things, can you tell us about Clear Blue Commercial? How are you serving folks?
Well, we are a commercial brokerage. We represent landlords and tenants and buyers and sellers in all forms of real estate transactions. But what we're really doing is we're saving the planet using our real estate licenses. We are a certified green business, a certified woman-owned business, a certified small business, and a B Corp, and we're the only commercial real estate services firm on the planet that is all those things.
Well, congratulations. Now, why was it so important to be all of those things?
Well, we really we enjoy real estate, and we enjoy the earth. And one of the things that we realized when we first started the company is that our commercial buildings are the largest single source of greenhouse gas emissions on the planet. So larger than all our jet planes and our cars and everything else, it's our commercial buildings. So we saw it as an opportunity to not only increase our clients' ROI dramatically, but also an opportunity to have a positive impact on our planet and our communities.
Now, so that stat about commercial real estate being, what was it, the largest greenhouse gas?
It's the largest single source of greenhouse gas emissions
in the world. So that's the world. That's not just America?
That's not just America.
Wow. Did not know that. So what makes it so? Why is that so?
Well, every building, first of all, has to be built, has to be heated and cooled, has to be lit, and then has to be arrived at somehow. So people are coming to and from our commercial buildings, then they're inside them. There's industry in them. So in our industrial commercial buildings, we're making and producing all of our domestic products, or all of our earth products, which I guess are domestic. So all of the real activity of our species is done in our buildings.
Right. And that, so when you were deciding what type of company to be and all of those issues were important to you, was one more important than the other?
Well, I think that for me, real estate is just another tool in my toolbox for me personally. And I've done a lot of things in a lot of different industries. And during the dot-com explosion or implosion,
it was both. There was an explosion and an implosion.
Yes, I worked for a company that went the way of Enron and WorldCom.
Oh, wow.
And I was literally the last person out the door in the Western region. So I sold off all the assets and kept our creditors at bay and laid everybody off and handed over the keys and turned off the lights. And I had been a consultant, an operations consultant, and I had been recruited by one of my clients that then turned into this company. And at that time, I thought, what do I want to do now? I could just go back to consulting, but I didn't want to be the downsizing expert, even though I was at that point.
Right.
So I went and I got my real estate broker's license, and I thought, you know, if I'm passing myself off as a real estate expert, I should go get a job in my local real estate office, which I did. And I had a very bad attitude about it. And I would come home and grumble to my then new husband, who sat me down and basically asked me, what's your problem? And I told him all the complaints I had about it. And he finally looked at me and said, you think this is beneath you, don't you? And I said, well, yeah, kind of. I mean, I've done all these big, important things, and now I spend my weekends sitting in condos watching couples fight, and it's just, you know, I think I could be doing something much bigger and more important. And he said, well, get over yourself. He goes, this license does not define you. You're always talking about how you want to bring people together and create these collaborations and consortiums, and you want to save the planet, you want to do all these things. So, you know, put this license in your toolbox and go do it. And 20 years later, we own this company together.
Did when you were going through, so you decided real estate, so you it sounds like you initially went to residential real estate. That was your first kind of foray in?
That was my first foray in, because I thought it was, I like to joke, residential real estate is the gateway drug for for professional real estate investors. I thought it was what I knew and what I would be best at. It turns out it was not. I really enjoyed being in a much, what I felt was a much more professional environment, involved in much bigger business.
Right.
The thing I love best about being in commercial real estate is you get to be in everybody else's business.
Right. And then, so the business to business environment was a better fit for you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's really enjoyable to not only have a bigger impact on the planet and the community, but also to really start to understand how business and how the economy works. You get to see a much bigger picture.
Mm-hmm.
And that was fascinating to me.
Now, when you were learning about the business, at some point you decided to kind of go all in with this, the women business, and you're active in NABO and WBNC. What was the thinking there?
Well, the first thinking was, I'm a woman and I have a business, so maybe I should say that. But also, as you may know, there's legislation that 5% of all government contracts have to go to women-owned businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And all the large corporations get all kinds of bonuses or tax incentives for going with women-owned businesses. So I thought it was a real opportunity for a real niche. And I've found them to be a great community, and I've really enjoyed that part of this business.
And that's a clear differentiator from your competition?
Absolutely. I mean, when you think of, and I think a lot of myself, obviously. So I think when I think of my business and I think of who the other people are in the industry, if you look at, you know, some of the biggies, Jones Lang LaSalle, Cushman & Wakefield, CBRE, none are women owned businesses.
Right. So you stand out in a positive way. And how about from like a talent recruiting standpoint? Are you finding that a lot of your people are kind of drawn to, hey, we're going to kind of do this, we're all in this together?
Absolutely. Those are the people that are aligned with us. We find because we're a B Corp and we're in the green community, we're part of the conversation about social responsibility and environmental stewardship. We find we run into our people everywhere that we speak out. And so we find that like-minded people are attracted to us and want to park their licenses here.
Now, before we get too far into other things, please share with our listeners a little bit about the B Corps and what makes them different. We've had several episodes here about the B Corps. It's not something in Atlanta that there's dozen. I don't even think there may not even be a dozen B Corps here in Atlanta, but it is kind of growing. I wouldn't say rapidly yet, but it's something that's an important way you can structure your business. Do you mind sharing a little bit about what it is and why you chose to become a B Corp?
Oh, not at all. We're so proud of our B Corp status, and it was not an easy certification to get. There are 3,000 B Corps worldwide. Right now, I think they just hit the 3,000 mark. And when we first certified 2 years ago, they were just under 2,000. So it is starting to grow faster. But because it is a high bar to hit, you know, there's not as many. We hope many more will join us. But essentially, what the B Corp certification shows is that we have to adhere to a much higher standard of community and environmental benefit than just rate of return to our stakeholders. So they, you know, I like to say they sifted through our trash with a microscope, not literally, but figuratively. They look at our hiring practices, our purchasing practices, all of our company policies, where all our revenue comes from, and where it all goes. And so we really have to show that we are walking our talk. And we are through some of the projects that we have spearheaded. For instance, in this small community in California where we were from during the drought, we produced projects that are still saving 3 million gallons of water a year.
Wow.
So we're really looking to make an impact where we can. We have won a couple of community philanthropy awards. And in fact, we won one in our first year. And I was thrilled to be nominated, but everybody I talked to said, you know, forget, you're never going to get it because it's really for big companies and it's about, you know, dollar figures and how much you give. And because we were a smaller company, we weren't in an area to do that. And when they called me to tell me that we had received it, they said, the reason we looked at you is even though you're a smaller company, you give a higher percentage of your gross revenue and the highest percentage of pro bono and employee match and employee volunteer time of any of the companies that we looked at. And I was so proud of that, and I went running into my husband's office to tell him how excited I was that this was the case with us. And he said, what? He's like, let's put a stop to all that goodness.
Can't have that.
Yes, but continued at that level. And we just recertified as a B Corp. And you need a minimum of 80 points on a 200-point scale to certify. And in our recertification, we have ended up with 120 points,
wow,
which we're proud of because that's bigger than Patagonia. It's bigger than Ben and Jerry's. We really have found ways every day to walk our talk.
Well, I think what's great about the B Corp is gives the entrepreneurs who think like you do, and I believe think like I do as well, kind of a place where they can share to the world that, hey, the business doesn't have to be about, you know, somebody just making money for the sake of making money or being greedy or exploiting. They can do business for good, and it can help all the stakeholders, and your stakeholders are more than just you and your shareholders. There's your community as well. And that you can have a business that really and truly does serve your community and make money. Like, there's no shame in that. So I think
not at all. And good business people know that smart resource usage is good business.
Right.
But ultimately sustainability is, you have to have financial sustainability in order to have any other form of sustainability.
Right. It's like they say in the plane, when the plane's going down, you have to put the oxygen on yourself first. So you have to kind of be able to sustain yourself before you can help others. So.
Absolutely. We are not a nonprofit organization.
Right.
we always like to say, you know, the more money we make, the more good we can do.
The more people you can help. Absolutely. We believe the same exact thing. Now talk about sustainability. Maybe something that there's a misconception that, oh, sustainability costs a lot of money and I don't know if it's going to pay off. But I've read surveys that say sustainability might be more expensive, but it does pay off. There is an ROI to kind of become a more sustainable organization, especially in real estate.
Well, and that's a really common misconception that it costs more. One of the reasons that we have really dedicated ourselves to this is ultimately it improves the bottom line. And one of the things that we've been able to do is access, you know, every grant, every program, every tax incentive that there is, so that we can provide improvements to our clients' properties and our clients' communities, often with little or no out-of-pocket from them. So I can give you a small example of a small building that we managed. It's a 40,000 square foot building. We managed it for 8 years. Our client purchased it for just under $3 million. Over time, we replaced all the lighting with LED lighting. We put free EV charging stations in the parking lot. We did completely converted the turf into. We removed the sprinklers and put in drip systems and put in drought tolerant landscaping. And with literally no capital expenditure on behalf of the landlord, we were able to do on bill financing for the energy for the project for the energy saving. So just the energy bills didn't drop for the first 3 years, but they didn't go up either. So we just paid it through our energy bill, and they sold the building 7 years later for just over $8 million.
Wow.
So they more than tripled his money. The building was never underwater. We were able to do all of this within the normal operating budget of the building. So I never had to ask the landlord for any money. So the idea that green is more expensive is not necessarily true. And whether my favorite cartoon shows somebody speaking up at a conference and saying, "Well, what if we do all this work and invest all this to make a better world, and climate change turns out to be a hoax?" It doesn't matter who's hurt by that.
Exactly this. Right.
You know.
Exactly.
All we've done is found better, cleaner ways of living as a species on the planet.
Right. And that's the thing, is that I think the misconception is because people, like, this is what you think about because this is in the DNA of you and your organization. So you're looking for creative ways to kind of get this job done. So you see all these possibilities where other people just see hurdles. You see opportunities.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because there's nothing but opportunities. And why are we here if not to leap over hurdles?
Right. But that's but because you think that way, you can solve these problems. They're not insurmountable, where some people who are looking for reasons to say no, just, you know, they say, forget it. It's not going to pay off, or it's not worth it, or it's too hard. But you're looking for ways to figure it out. So kudos to you.
Well, thank you.
Now, I saw in your background that you have a master's in fine arts in theater. How did, what was the thinking there? How did that help you in your career, and what were you thinking at the time?
Yeah, my parents had the same question. you know, I like to say if you lose enough jobs, you get a great resume. So I'm extremely well-rounded, and I've learned a lot, and I'm not afraid of a microphone. And it is impossible to play an intelligent person or play a business person or play a doctor if you haven't steeped yourself in the knowledge of that. So I am
I think some of your employees have to go out.
Yeah, we're taking care of it now. I'm sorry for the distraction.
No worries.
What I want to say is what my theater and film background did for me is it led me into the entertainment industry, which led me into running a movie studio. And what I discovered in running a movie studio is that it was all about operations and real estate. We were renting facilities all over town. We were doing all kinds of build out. Running a movie studio is very much like running a small city. It takes hundreds of people. You're always building things. You use a lot of energy. You have to feed people. You have to think about how people are going to be transported. And so I ended up, and you have to sign a lot of leases and make a lot of land deals. And it ended up, in the long run, leading me right into real estate.
Yeah, I can see the overlap. But so initially, though, you were planning a career that was maybe more, at the time, you probably thought more creative and artistic. Is that the path you were kind of on?
Yes, I was getting a master's in directing for theater, film, and television.
And so you took swings at that? You were writing stuff, you were directing, and you were performing?
Oh, yeah, and I still did. I did stand-up comedy for a while, and my husband and I both come out of that industry, so we did. We still do some little things on the side, and we make all our own videos for all of our listings. What it really did for me is it made me not afraid of a microphone.
Right.
And that's a huge asset in business.
Right. I have a 20-year-old son who's in college right now, and he's kind of going down that path of, like, he wants to be a performer. He wants to do comedy in some form. And that's the way I feel, is like, look, no matter how this plays out, those skills are transferable to anything. I mean, so go for it.
Yeah, they absolutely are. And you don't know where it's going to lead. And, when I got my first job in the high tech industry, in the interview, they asked me, what do you think you're going to be doing in 5 years? And I said, well, you know, 5 years ago, I didn't even know what I'm doing now existed.
Exactly.
So I think 5 years from now, I'll be doing something completely different. But I think this is the company that's going to invent it. So this is where I want to be.
That's right. Now, what's been kind of your most rewarding part of your job now is seeing those kind of big changes, the impact you're having? I mean, is it what you dreamed would happen, or is it starting to happen?
It is absolutely starting to happen. I can tell you the funnest thing we ever did was we negotiated a large lease for a large rail transit project. And when that closed and they got ready to move in, we decided to throw a reception for them. And one of my engineers owned a catering company with his mother, so they catered it. My other engineer was a musician and he had a band, so we brought a band. My operations manager was a dancer and had a dance company. So one morning in the shower, I rewrote the words to Folsom Prison Blues because it's got that great train downbeat on it.
Right.
And we threw a reception and we did a flash mob. And because of our film background, we just happened to be there with a three-camera shoot, and we did a YouTube video and gave it to them as a gift.
Wow.
Now, we didn't make money off of that particular thing, but we did a whole lot in terms of team building, employee retention, and it was a whole lot of fun, and everybody felt fully utilized at work. And it made an impression. What other commercial real estate company is going to do that?
Right. Surprise and delight. That it's amazing yes. how good that is for business. So now what's next for you guys?
We're really looking at... we want to be statewide in the next 2 to 3 years, and we're starting that. We want to be employee-owned in 5 years. And we're really looking at ways to take some of our programming to large government agencies and larger real estate portfolios to increase our impact in terms of the community and the environment.
So I'm curious about the employee-owned part of this. How do you, like, what steps are you taking today? Because that's something I'd also like to do. We're building this Business Radio X network, and we're putting studios around the country. And at some point, I would like it to be owned by everybody. So what are some of the steps to make something like that happen?
Well, it can be an expensive process. We are utilizing our B Corp connections. Because there are several consultancies that show how to do that. But because we want to maintain as a woman-owned business, we would redistribute all of our shares so that 49% of our shares go to the employees, mm-hmm. regardless of what gender they are. And then, but we'll always maintain 51% with myself or other female partners to maintain our woman-owned business status.
Right, and that way you can have the best of both worlds.
Exactly.
Well, Carolyn, it's been an absolute pleasure talking with you. If there is, like, who is the perfect prospect for you, and what is the pain they're having where they should call Clear Blue Commercial?
Certainly anybody who's interested in investing or interested in divesting large commercial property in California should absolutely call us. Or if they're interested in having their assets managed in California right now, they should absolutely call us. We have improved our clients' bottom line immensely, regardless of what side of the transaction we're on or what the intent is for the asset itself.
And if they wanted to get a hold of you or learn more about your firm, the website?
www.clearbluecommercial.com.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Carolyn, for sharing your story today on Thought Leader Radio.
Thank you. This has just been such a pleasure, Lee.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Katie Galley and our guest today, Carolyn Pistone with Clear Blue Commercial. We will see you all next time on Thought Leader Radio.